On this episode of China Unscripted, corruption in the World Health Organization, how the Chinese Communist Party changes the narrative, and how the rest of the world became complicit with China. Welcome to China Unscripted. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganesda.
And tonight, oh gosh, this tea is going to be overbrewed if I don't pour it right this very second. We are drinking Alishan milk oolong tea. So there's this type of oolong tea from Taiwan that sort of has this nice milky flavor. And I know that probably sounds disgusting, but it's actually very nice. We have had this on the podcast before, so I'm excited to have it again.
I mean, people have been putting milk in tea for hundreds of years. I don't know. Why does it sound disgusting?
Well, because the British putting milk in tea is disgusting.
Chris is a tea purist.
I am. Those Brits. I mean, they purposefully went to India with their stolen fake tea to brew Assam and all this garbage tea. Cheers, everyone.
Wait, so Chris, are you saying that actually the conspiracy theory is that tea really didn't come from India? It came from Great Britain?
What?
What? Video editor note, please cut that.
Oh, we're off to a great start.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed this tea. We've had it on the show before. If you want to have some tea, which is a nice thing to have during quarantine, you can help support the show if you go to go.pathofcha.com/unscripted. And then buy through that link, and you'll help the show, and you'll have some really nice tea or teaware. And they're not shipping from China currently.
One of the, either the last podcast or the previous podcast, somebody suggested that your tea podcast should be called China Unfiltered.
Hmm. Well, I mean, you kind of do filter the tea because you don't want to actually... Well, actually, in China, if you have green tea, they just, like, usually get, like, a glass cup filled with boiling hot water and throw green tea in there, and just the leaves are in there. So that really is unfiltered.
Yes, yeah, I remember. Like, you filter it with your teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. I was up in, like, the mountains of the Tibetan area, like, Gansu-ish area, and we stopped on a bus at this, like, the only restaurant in probably 200 miles, which was not even a restaurant. It was like a shack on the side of the barren highway. And they gave everybody tea. And it was like the cheapest plastic cups you can imagine. They put the tea leaves directly in. Then they poured boiling water. And as the boiling water started to melt the cups, when you're supposed to drink it before all the plastic melted and the cup dissolved.
Yeah, I kind of remember that.
That's how they traditionally drank tea, right?
Right, yeah, melted plastic. Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's how Confucius had tea.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of melted plastic, today I want to talk about the corruption in the WHO.
Sick melt.
Ooh, okay.
All right.
I was going to talk about, like, my side of the highway in China story, which is about peeing in a gully, but let's go.
Oh, hold on. Now let's hear that story. That sounds...
I mean, it's...
This isn't China Uncensored, Shelley.
Oh, that's true. Okay, let's go to WHO corruption. I always want to say WHO, even though WHO.
No, I don't think we can leave that thread unpulled.
It's not that interesting of a story. Yeah, anyway, anybody who's been on a bus in China, long distance bus in China, has probably had the same experience.
Yeah, they just pull over, and then it's like women on this side, men on this side, and then you go and you get back in the bus.
Only like because we were in Gansu, actually, also they had us go down into like a pretty substantial gully on the side of the highway. So it wasn't just like you're on either side of the bus on flat road. It's like, please hike down this cliff in order to pee on the ground.
Were there any ferns in this gully?
No. Everybody's just... But again, Chinese bathrooms, there's not really a lot of privacy. As Matt, I think you've probably told that story of yours.
I don't know if I told it on the podcast, but anyway.
I think you did.
let's not go into it anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, so that, I mean, is not super the problem. It was more, okay, and then hiking back up.
But thanks to dear leader Xi Jinping, now there's a toilet revolution in China. So if we were ever allowed back in China, we could use those golden toilets.
I think the toilet revolution is one of those things that's just also just an indicative of like the corruption in a bureaucracy
and inability of the central government to implement unified policies across China because they leave it up to individual local officials to implement the idea of the thing without like specific budgets or policies or, you know.
And local officials sometimes have an interesting idea of what will bring prestige and renown and promotion to their area.
So before we get into the idea of how the WHO corruption is affecting all of us and keeping us quarantined and making us sicker and more unhealthy, you need to provide a little more context to the toilet revolution, because right now you just mentioned gold toilet and none of that makes sense.
Matthew? So.
Xi Jinping had said many years ago that basically that the bathroom situation in China was not good and that China should improve its restroom situation across the country. All right, I'm sure he had some like catchy four-character phrase for this.
Fight the people's war against
against bad toilets. But the thing is that Xi Jinping says a thing, right? And then it's not like China doesn't have this kind of structured system for implementing policy. And this is kind of what happens when you have a fake legal system. So instead, it's like Xi Jinping says the idea. Here's the concept. And then local officials are responsible for doing what they think is the politically correct way to implement that policy. And so some of them, you know, make sure that there's great public restrooms in all the tourist areas. So that the tourists see that, you know, China looks great.
Bless you. It's okay to sneeze on a podcast.
It's unlikely that officials would do it for, like, the most impoverished people because there's not a political benefit for that. Some of them go to extremes, and there is one case of a local official building this bathroom that had, like, not only, like, really high-end, you know, toilets and everything, but it also had like a vending machine and a microwave.
Wi-Fi, I think.
Like things that should not go in any restroom, but they were there. And then there's one case of someone building like a gold-plated toilet. So,
and that man was Donald Trump.
They had the best toilets. So good.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I think in Trump Towers, in his
New York
penthouse.
Yeah,
his like everything is gold. Even like the carpet apparently is gold, and people have to put on like these special little slippers to walk on it. But yeah, the toilet was gold. I don't know if it was real gold or just looked gold, but
I mean, but there's something about that as like the last thing you'd ever want a gold plate, and yet,
I mean, it probably wouldn't show stains.
Anyway.
Isn't gold antibacterial?
No. Hey.
Hey, so moving on. But that's the idea of the toilet revolution, which is you have an idea, but it can't be implemented properly. As it's just like, but I think actually what's interesting about the toilet revolution is that it just shows how when you have a country run not really by a government, but by a political party, that even though China does have a government, on top of the government and more powerful is the Communist Party. So
I would say the Communist Party is really not comparable to like a political party the way that we think of them in the U.S.
No. Well, American political parties are small entities that are within a larger constitutional framework. But in China, the Communist Party is outside of the government, above the government, and is not constrained by the legal system. So, but it's kind of like the entire government is controlled by a political entity that has no need for or no desire for rule of law. And so what they use in China is the appearance of a constitution and a legal framework to implement the Communist Party's policies. So it's like there's no way to like fix that system, or like even if there's a law that says, oh, you know, now, you know, factories are not allowed to pollute more than blah, blah, blah. Like, there's no way to really implement that with a legal framework. It's only like whether you offend certain people in the party, then you have to like not do it.
I mean, the constitution in China. China has a constitution. The Communist Party also has a constitution. The party's constitution is more important than the country's constitution. And also, they're basically also just pieces of paper that don't mean anything.
Right. And it's actually, Winston was touching on this in our last podcast, Serpent ZA. And he was saying that, you know, there's like one year they decided to ban motorcycles, but actually everyone kept riding the motorcycles because there were no consequences until the party officials came to town. And then like anyone caught riding a motorcycle would be, you know, beaten with road cones and whatnot. That's basically what it is. So that just shows you that it has nothing to do with whether there's a law there. It's only whether you're offending or conforming to the desires of people in power.
And that's how you wind up with the golden toilet.
Yes.
Yes, cheers to that. Okay.
Cheers to the completely broken system that is the modern Chinese government.
Huh. So.
Hey, you know what else is corrupt and broken?
Ooh. Or what would be the response?
But who's on first?
Yeah,
yes.
This is why in the scripts I started to put dots between WHO, just so like we don't say who, we just say WHO, because otherwise it just becomes a long who's on first joke.
Mm-hmm.
Also very confusing.
Very confusing. So let's talk about the WHO, the World Health Organization. Chris?
Well, I feel like that was a challenge.
It is a challenge.
Well, so, I mean, just more and more is coming out about just how horribly corrupt that. There was a... You shared with me like a press conference, or I don't know if it was a press conference, but some meeting with the head of the WHO.
Dr. Tedros.
Side note, not a doctor.
Not a doctor. Yes, he's not a medical doctor. He was what was he?
He has a PhD in community health.
Community health. That just sounds.
I don't think you have to be a doctor necessarily, although he is the first head of the WHO who has not been trained as a physician.
Yeah. But also just like it's great to have a PhD, right? But the thing is, if you go around calling yourself doctor in a context where people are likely to assume that that means you're a medical doctor,
Yeah. That's
kind of like fraud.
I don't know if it's fraud, but it definitely is misleading in this context.
And self-aggrandizing.
I mean, he's not the only PhD who goes around calling themselves doctor or somebody, Yeah. Right? We all know people who do that.
Sure. You know, you have a PhD in history or something and you go by doctor.
But I mean, Joe Biden's wife is not a medical doctor.
Dr. Joe Biden?
Her name is Dr. Joe Biden?
Dr. Jill Biden.
Biden.
I heard Joe too.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Jill Biden.
Okay. Well, I mean, but that's like, if you're in the context, if you're a professor mm-hmm. and you go by doctor and everyone knows what you teach, then like that's fine, right? It's just an honorary title out of respect. It's just that in the WHO context, people are making the wrong assumption. And I think Dr. Tedros is fine with that. End of side note. Let's talk about the corruption thing.
I mean, you know, you make it sound like he's not qualified, but really his time as the, what was it? The
health minister
in Ethiopia really gave him the qualifications he needs to serve China very well. Like
not one, but three cover-ups of cholera outbreak.
Yeah, he said the country was just suffering from some watery diarrhea.
Yes. I mean, that is a euphemism for cholera.
Yep.
Watery diarrhea that kills you.
Yeah. And so that explains why he did such a stand-up job basically helping the Chinese Communist Party cover up the coronavirus outbreak.
Well, I think that, you know, it's not like if we replace Dr. Tedros tomorrow, I don't think that whoever replaced him would have the political ability to necessarily do anything different in the WHO.
Well, yeah, there's loads of systemic problems with the WHO, which I want to get to in a bit. But I now that we've kind of established Tedros a little bit, why don't you tell us a bit about the press conference he gave?
Is this the one where he claimed that Taiwan was being racist against him? Oh, well, there was a WHO press conference on April 8th, and...
Oh, one more side note about that. After he became the head of the WHO, he specifically went to China and assured them that he and the WHO would honor the One China principle.
I mean, I don't know if he, like, that's the kind of thing that you know, Chinese state-run media will report as if, like, you know, this head of state or whatever went to Xi Jinping specifically just to tell him that we support the One China principle, when in actuality, it was probably that there was some press conference with state-run media and somebody asked a question about whether they would. You know.
Wait, are you saying Chinese state-run media would be disingenuous?
It's exactly what happened with Trump and the Chinese reporter from Phoenix TV, where she was asking him a question about whether, you know, he would cooperate with China. Like, she was trying to get him to say that the U.S. will cooperate with China so that that would be like a propaganda coup. You know what I mean?
The soundbite.
Yeah, the soundbite. So,
but the point is, like, Tedros has definitely upheld the One China principle.
Yeah, I mean, but this predates his time in the WHO, because I think I also sent you guys this memo.
Oh, yeah?
That...
Under Margaret Chan's leadership.
Yeah, back in 2010. So Taiwan had just been allowed to join the IHR, which is like the International Health Reporting System, which is a system where even if you're not a member state of the WHO or an observer, or like you don't have any status with the WHO, you can still report like public health issues or data or something from your country to the WHO through this reporting system. And this like confidential memo to WHO staff was about how they should treat Taiwan in relation to this reporting mechanism. So it was like, you can't acknowledge, if you receive any kind of report from Taiwan, you can't personally acknowledge it. You have to send it to the WHO's point of contact for Taiwan. It, you know, also, Taiwan must always be called Taiwan, comma, province of China. Mm-hmm. The Taiwan province of China was how it was spelled out. They're like, in any WHO memos, like public, anything that's printed, you must refer to Taiwan as the Taiwan province of China. Also, if you want, this is the kicker for me, if you want to include any data from Taiwan, like if you want to use the data in a report or publicize it in any way, you have to clear it with the WHO contact for Taiwan. And the clearance process also involves the permanent mission of Taiwan to the UN in Geneva.
Not Taiwan.
I mean, permanent mission of China to the UN in Geneva. Taiwan doesn't have a permanent mission to the UN because it's not recognized by the UN. But so any information that Taiwan provides to the WHO that the WHO wants to publicly use has to be cleared through the Chinese delegation at the UN.
And this goes back to what you're saying about how it's not just Tedros, it's systemic problems within the World Health Organization. But I think the fact that Taiwan was warning people, that warned the WHO back in December that the coronavirus was human-to-human transmissible, but the WHO didn't tell anybody about that warning. They just kept following what China was telling them, that it's not.
From what I see, it might have been more phrased as like, we have heard from Chinese colleagues that there are Chinese medical workers getting sick in China from this. Is it human-to-human transmissible? You should look into that.
And then they probably asked their overlords at the permanent mission from China, and they said, no, what?
No, no, it's not a problem. I mean, obviously, there's that famous tweet, now, I guess infamous tweet from January 14th or something, where the WHO tweeted that there is no human-to-human transmission. There's no evidence of human-to-human transmission.
It wouldn't even be possible for it to be human-to-human transmissible until after that big, you know, party gathering in Wuhan in early January.
Oh, and until after Xi Jinping said it was okay.
Yeah.
On January 20th for it to be.
Right. I mean, Xi Jinping is so powerful, he gets to decide when the virus is human-to-human transmissible. And that was January 20th.
Oh, he shouldn't have made that decision. He should have told the virus.
It's like a Wile E. Coyote thing where he can run off a cliff, but he's fine until he opens up a book about gravity and then he falls.
Oh, Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it's surprisingly relevant.
Speaking of Xi Jinping, you know who I found out is a goodwill ambassador for the WHO?
Is this going to depress me?
Yes.
Peng Liyuan.
His wife?
His wife. Oh. Actually, she was appointed a WHO goodwill ambassador back in 2011.
I mean, it makes sense. She was like a famous singer in China. She gave a lovely performance to all the soldiers after they massacred students in Tiananmen Square. That's a
You forgot to mention that she's in the PLA.
Oh, yeah. She's
she's a famous singer who has like a... What is her rank in the PLA.
It's something pretty high.
Yeah. I'm not sure if she's a general or something like that. But she was never a combat soldier. She was in the performance troop.
Really? I always imagined she would just come onto the field and sing like those notes that are so high pitched that they make your brain melt.
It would be like
it only kills enemy soldiers. Where there's no enemy soldiers, it only kills students.
Oh, no. Oh. That got real dark.
Oh.
But anyway, she is the UN Goodwill, not UN, WHO Goodwill Ambassador for the prevention of the spread of tuberculosis and HIV/AIDS.
Wow. She really failed at preventing the spread of HIV and AIDS in China.
Well, I mean, she was only appointed to that in 2011, so we can't
only
really...
they had done it before.
Yeah, but that's still better than being the WHO ambassador for the prevention of the spread of leprosy.
Why?
I mean, nobody else wants to go near you.
I think leopards are cool.
Ha ha.
And Matt is showing his spots.
This is why
people listen to China Unscripted.
There is, by the way, a WHO ambassador for the prevention of the spread of leprosy. He's a Japanese guy.
Okay, and I assume he does not have leprosy.
No, I don't believe so.
So it seems
I don't think that Peng Liyuan has tuberculosis and AIDS. I don't think that's a qualification for being a goodwill
ambassador.
Well,
you implied that by no one wanting to be near the leprosy ambassador.
Yes, it was a joke about leprosy, not a joke about...
Okay, oh, you said it so straight face. I couldn't tell.
Okay. Okay. Moving on. Yeah.
How do you get to be those positions?
It's an appointment.
It's called... connections, Chris.
I kind of want to be an ambassador of something.
Chris.
Eczema. I'll be the ambassador of eczema.
I don't think you're supposed to be the ambassador of the disease. That's not how it works.
Open your borders to eczema.
Oh, God.
So Tedros or WHO, where were we? We were talking about how there's a warning.
Well, he had accused Taiwan of basically being racist against Africans, like perpetuating racist attacks against Africans, including himself.
And this is in the context of a huge spotlight being shined on the WHO. And people are like, wait, you guys are horribly corrupt. What are you doing? Especially you, Tedros. There was the movement to have him resign.
Well, there'd been people talking about it.
Uh-huh.
But I think also the WHO had a lot of bad press regarding Taiwan in particular, because news started coming out about, again, how, you know, they had not listened to Taiwan's question or warning back in December. They were preventing Taiwan from accessing information. And then also Taiwan is doing really well at controlling the coronavirus, the CCP virus in Taiwan. There's only been 5 people, as of this recording, who have died.
They're
in
better
the
than
country.
Any other country in the
yeah,
world.
23 million people, 5 deaths. So...
I'm thinking because we're in New York City, right, where you have 8.5 million people, and how many people have died just in New York City? It's over 1,000, right?
It's pretty grim. So Taiwan has been a big, I guess, success story, if you can call it that.
We should have stayed in Taiwan.
Actually.
I don't think we could have.
Taiwanese street food made me fat.
Yes, that's the problem. But... anyway, what was I talking about? Taiwan, racist.
So
the WHO had been getting a bunch of negative press regarding how they treat Taiwan and being asked if they would let Taiwan join as an observer or something. And so I think that was when, it's a very Communist Party move, actually, what he kind of did to kind of, try to, turn this back on Taiwan.
Playing the race card?
Not just playing the race card, but also...
changing the narrative.
And being the victim and, all this kind of stuff. The interesting thing is that people are now finding that some of the racist attacks, first of all, he was talking about kind of online trolls and things like that. It wasn't like the Taiwanese government had been racist to Africans.
Which is definitely from his soundbite kind of what it seemed like he was saying.
Yeah, he was including Taiwan, it's definitely Taiwan.
Really imagine Tsai Ing-wen and her cats and her dogs being just a... huge racist.
Yeah, so the, Ministry of Foreign Affairs from Taiwan, the Taiwanese government came back and pushed back hard on this. And now people are finding that some of these trolls who have been attacking Tedros, supposedly from Taiwan, are probably mainland like 50 cent like bots.
Wow.
Basically.
And on top of that, meanwhile, like if you actually go inside China, there's been like this huge, really xenophobic, racist like attack on foreigners, particularly black foreigners in China. Like I saw earlier today, like some footage of cops just like slamming some black people on the ground and arresting them because there's this, idea going around that they're the ones spreading the disease in China.
Yeah, I mean, the Chinese government has encouraged that idea that foreigners are bringing it back with them.
Do you think Tedros is going to complain about how racist China is?
And how Africans are being treated?
Well, he complained about Taiwan province of China.
There you go.
But you know, also, like, the racism in mainland China, it's like the mainland China has a history. In the last like 20 years, you have more and more Africans in China, especially like the Guangzhou area. A lot of people from Nigeria trading, you know, various traders and that sort of thing. It's been really bad for Africans in China. And they're treated definitely like third, fourth class citizens. Like it's worse than being, you know, an ethnic minority.
Or a migrant worker.
A migrant worker, yeah. No, it's been really, really rough for them. And it doesn't get a lot of press attention. I think maybe we talked about it once on our show in the last like 5 years or something. But
I mean,
it's
something that they understand, the Chinese government understands as a problem for their PR with Africa. Because remember a couple of years ago in the CCTV, New Year's gala thing, like the spring festival
the
gala.
Blackface.
They had this like whole skit that was about friendship between China and Africa, but they had a Chinese woman in blackface.
Yeah.
Yeah, they totally Justin Trudeau'd it.
Oh. Matt, you're really sharp today with those barbs, huh?
Yeah. So anyway.
It must be the beard.
Yes, it must be the beard.
Shelly. When are you going to join the team?
When am I going to grow a beard?
Next podcast, we'll buy you a fake beard. Just put it on.
Yeah, okay. No.
No? All right, everyone listening, if you want Shelly to have a beard on the next podcast, let us know. Actually, I don't know if costume stores are open. It seems to me they're essential businesses. But we could probably order one on like Taobao or something. So.
Yeah, that would take 4 weeks to get here. I'm okay with it. Yeah.
All right, 4 weeks from now, Shelly with a beard. What do you think? Let us know in the comments below.
No.
All right, so that's going to happen.
Yep.
What were we talking about?
Oh, WHO.
Yeah. How badly Africans are treated in mainland China.
Well, it's very much a do as I say, don't do as I do kind of thing in terms of racism and things when it comes to China, right? Where the Communist Party will complain about racism all the time, but it is totally justified when they do it.
We are at a fork in the road of this podcast. Do we continue to talk about WHO corruption? Or from here, I think we could talk about, because we've seen with the coronavirus, how China changes the narrative. And the racism thing is part of that. So we could, which one of these paths do we want to follow right now?
Let us know in the comments below.
I kind of go with B.
B? I didn't letter them. Because I feel that, you know, ranks them.
Uh-huh.
And like, that's kind of, you know, prejudice.
How would
I think choices should choose their own letters.
Oh, God, Matt.
All right. Propaganda narratives it is.
Well, actually, I think an interesting thing that ties into the WHO corruption is at the same press conference where Dr. Tedros, you know, accused Taiwan of being racist, he also said that the WHO does not do politics. And it seems to me that the majority of what the WHO is doing now is politics.
Yeah.
It's really, but that's again, he also criticized the U.S. and I think Trump essentially for politicizing the coronavirus outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, don't politicize the outbreak. And of course, this is also exactly what the Chinese Communist Party does.
Yeah.
When they get upset about being criticized, they say, don't politicize
this
issue.
Don't get political.
Yeah.
That's what they did with Falun Gong. They're getting political.
Well, I mean, with lots of stuff. I mean, they're saying, if you politicize, basically it means don't criticize us, right?
Wasn't there in that same press conference also something where like a CNN reporter said said something like contradicting the idea that it started in China, or what was that?
I don't remember saying that.
Well, I will start to look that up, but I also saw today that like Nature magazine, it's like a big science magazine, has recently apologized for early articles suggesting that the virus began in China.
I saw that headline, but I haven't seen the original apology. Like, if they were just apologizing for calling it the Wuhan virus or the Chinese virus or something, I think that would be one thing. But if they're outright apologizing for indicating that it started in China, I think that's really crazy.
Yeah. Also, especially considering that Chinese state-run media in January referred to it as the Wuhan virus.
No. They've gone back and erased all of those headlines.
Oh, really?
They've gone back and changed the headlines that used to say Wuhan virus.
I like how they can make history internally consistent.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do right now. Did you find the thing?
I did find the thing. But actually, that kind of reminds me of like what Disney did with Star Wars. They just, you know, wipe out extra storylines, make sure everyone knows what canon is. That's what the Communist Party is basically weebs.
Okay.
They're just making sure
Disney is the CCP. Okay.
No, they're just trying to make sure everyone knows what's canon.
I see.
It's very helpful. Anyways, what the CNN contributor said was that he erroneously said that the WHO had urged travel restrictions on, which was not true. The WHO was saying travel bans are silly, which is what the Chinese Communist Party was saying.
Yeah, that was true when the travel bans were directed at China. But now that China has like a massive travel ban against the entire world, essentially not letting any foreigners in no matter what, travel bans are just necessary, part to keep their people safe.
I mean, foreigners like us are dirty.
Like Shelley?
I think he was talking about you.
Oh.
I'm not a foreigner. I'm a Chinese person.
That's
remember?
Right, a Huaren.
You're a panda. You ultimately belong to China, Shelley, according to the Communist Party.
I do. I will never get away.
Yeah, but you're a really bad Chinese.
I'll watch.
Well, from their perspective, right?
Yeah, okay.
All right, I'm going to stop, though, because I can see how this is a trap, and I don't want to go.
Tried to warn you.
It's a trap you laid out for yourself and walked into.
That's so true.
But, yes.
But anyway, listeners know what I mean.
Yeah, I'm a traitor is what you're saying.
Whoa, no. I wasn't even saying
what Matt is saying is you're a race traitor.
Yes, I believe that was what Matt said.
See, the Communist Party wants overseas Chinese to be obedient to the party.
Podcast 66, Shelley Zhang is a race traitor.
According to Matt Ganesa.
No. I did not say that. Those were not my words. They never came out of my mouth. Absolutely not.
Well, so this is how the Communist Party twists narratives. This was just an extended, we planned this out ahead of time. This was an example of how a narrative.
So I was criticizing the Communist Party, and then you turned it into calling me a racist. Or criticizing. You turned it into criticizing me.
I was trying to pull us out of the trap, and you just were like, oh boy, bait.
I don't believe I called you a racist.
No, but
she said, watch it, I believe, is what she said.
I was trying to warn you. I was Taiwan in this situation.
Which makes sense why you were ignored.
Yes, there we go. Okay, all right.
Oh, golly. Yes.
I don't even know where to pick it.
I need a moment to reset.
I'm not sure where to pick it up.
I'm out of tea. we're talking about how the Communist Party changes narratives. And I think what's very interesting about this is everything the Communist Party has done is always very transparent. They just have gotten away with it because the spotlight really hasn't been on them. Like, they might try something tricky, like say something in Chinese and like, oh, how will anyone in the West ever find out about that? Like a lot of directives to Chinese Student and Scholar Association.
I remember that, where like it would say something completely different in Chinese, or like in Chinese they would explicitly talk about the links to the local Chinese consulate or something like that, thinking that nobody would ever find this out.
Yeah.
You know?
And so since now the world is kind of looking at China in a new way, like it's just very, very transparent. Like I think one of the foreign minister people, folks, recently said, like, you know, we are completely against any kind of discrimination. And it's like, this is while, like, black people are being arrested on the streets for just being black.
Well, I mean, they will say that it's wrong.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you point blank ask them about something like that, they'll say, like, they condemn it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that won't change the just having a foreign minister or a foreign ministry spokesperson tell Western media that, like, China condemns that won't actually necessarily stop.
Yeah, but the point is, it's like, it's very transparent now what their propaganda is. Whereas in the past, it might have just been like people aren't really paying that much attention to China. And so they would just like, you know, look at what the foreign ministry says and report that. And that's that.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the heart of what the Chinese Communist Party has been able to get away with is this paradox, right? Like they kind of thrive in contradictions in a way because
dialectics.
Yeah.
Antithesis and synthesis.
Well, it's thesis and antithesis, which then
leads to synthesis.
Yeah, but
Josh Phillips would be so proud of us.
Maybe.
I don't think he would.
I don't know.
Let's
we kind of screwed that
Hegel.
One up. Yeah, let's not talk about Hegel. But the paradox.
I'm just Hegeling you.
Oh.
That was a trap as well.
Okay.
I had that plan from the beginning of the podcast. Everything was just...
Who's going to make a Marx pun?
And that would be a little...
You missed the Marx.
Well, I was not going to do that.
Okay.
Now that would have been the joke.
Okay.
But,
where
anyway.
Were we? Where were we, Shelley?
I think we were talking about Hegel. No.
I think we were talking about... Milk and Serpensetta.
We were talking about the idea that the Chinese Communist Party, their propaganda has this contradiction, right? Where... They can say, this is what Chen Yunling said in the interview in the episode that is coming out on Monday.
Yeah, so, hey, you guys are getting a little
preview. Yeah.
Sneak preview.
Yeah, so.
Sneak preep.
I'm not, it's early for me.
Chris
I don't
needs
know.
More tea is really what do. It is. Or maybe Chris should not have more tea. I'm not sure which one it is.
No, more tea.
Okay.
Yes, because we're sponsored by Path of Chaw. So definitely more tea is the solution to all your problems.
I think so.
Go to go.pathofchaw.com/unscripted and buy tea and you'll be great.
On that note, how about a timeout, a tea out? Make me tea, Matt, please. And we're back. We've got tea brewing. Yeah, we usually film at night after I've had a whole day to get wired up. So,
yeah.
Mm.
But now it's in the morning, so we gotta.
Yeah. So, anyways, the propaganda you've seen with the coronavirus really.
You're saying that it's making it more transparent, right?
Yeah, like it's been very clear to see how the Communist Party has moved through its playbook of propaganda narratives. Like you have first, there was the cover up. Then there was the, okay, now we're resolutely fighting this problem. Then it's like, oh, hey, don't criticize us because that's racist. And now they're into the cooperation.
You forgot thing. The save the world one.
Oh, yeah. Before the cooperation thing, it was the China is saving the world.
Yes. And then that's why you shouldn't criticize us,
and that's
too.
Why you shouldn't criticize. And now it's cooperation.
Right.
We need to work
and
together.
And soon it will be. Yeah. So the cooperation thing is interesting because that came after, oh, we also forgot the...
Chen Yunling.
Well, we forgot that the coronavirus started outside of China. It's not our fault, like trying to not be blamed
for the
coronavirus.
Oh, yeah, like, they had nothing to do with it. It came from the U.S. military.
Yeah, or Italy, you know.
Or Italy.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Or Africa.
The complex thing is that some of these narratives were being spun simultaneously.
Oh, no, and on so purpose. That's right. That's not an accident.
So it's not like there's a like a straight line of narrative... A, the narrative, B, the narrative, C, the narrative, D. It's like there's a lot of things that happen simultaneously. And I think that makes it confusing. And I think this type of obfuscation is to their advantage because it's increasingly difficult for people to who haven't been paying attention since the beginning to just like recognize what's happening.
Yeah.
And we see so much, I think, bad and even irresponsible reporting in Western media. And it's not necessarily like maliciously bad reporting. It's just, it's very hard for a reporter who hasn't really been following it, to jump in now and understand how this narrative has been spun very carefully by the Chinese Communist Party since December.
Actually, I think one of the big problems that we see in mainstream media are these opinion pieces where people are taking parts of things that benefit them personally or their worldview or whatever point they want to make and using those, mm-hmm. right? So, like, you have, like, diplomats or former officials who do not like what the Trump administration is doing with regards to China. They might be Democrats or they might be Republicans, but, like, they're saying, like, no, the U.S. needs to cooperate with China. We need to not be antagonistic with China. And they're using that cooperation line, which is the same line that the Chinese Communist Party is using, but they're kind of doing it because from a political perspective, they are, like, they're like, no, no, we're the reasonable ones, right? Like, we, like, engagement.
The cooperation sounds more reasonable.
Yeah. It's the whole engagement mentality that we've had for years about how, you know, the conventional wisdom is that if we engage with China, slowly they will be won over by our Western liberal democracy and, you know.
Because they really look so shining.
And, well, I mean, that's a whole other. So that's not a rabbit hole we want to go
into.
Yeah. But the idea that, like, okay, as their economy opens up, they're going to become naturally more free. You know,
and yeah, people need to know that when the Communist Party talks about cooperation, it's not cooperation that normal people understand. It's cooperate with us. We'll keep lying and stealing and cheating.
Who are you cooperating with? I think at a certain point, it becomes like instead of cooperating them, we become complicit in what the Chinese Communist Party is doing. Right? Like we become complicit in the human rights violations. Like. We have stories now of U.S. companies like Nike who are getting imported goods from Xinjiang that were probably made by Uyghur slave labor.
You
right?
can do it. Is that Nike's slogan?
It's just do it.
Just do it.
Just make it.
Yeah. Oh, that blew out my. But you know, like
on a lighter note, is it not time to pour some more tea?
No, it needs a little bit longer.
Okay.
So no.
So you just
not.
Interrupt me for no reason. Yeah.
Like Taiwan.
Ignoring me. Yeah. So the idea that
it's tea time. Matt?
Why thank you, Chris.
Absolutely. And is there anybody else in the room who wants tea?
I still
nope.
have tea.
All right.
I still have tea.
There I'll leave a little bit in here for you. Actually it's a fair amount in there for you. Plenty of tea. You were saying, Matt?
Go ahead,
oh,
Sean.
God, you guys.
If you had a beard, it'd be easier to listen to you.
I see. Yeah. Well, I think I'd have to have...
I'll give you some gravitas. By the way, can I point out, I'm a little upset that I could barely pronounce sneak peek, and Matt said, like, obfuscation. It was just, I'm having a hard day.
Weird. Okay.
Should we let Shelley talk now, or do you want to just keep going, Chris?
Yeah, I can go all night.
It wasn't like I was making a very important point about our...
Was Taiwan saying something?
Okay. Probably. So,
a good point. In fact, it was so good, people saw, because this is filmed, I was actually writing down a note about that because it was so good, about how we are complicit with China.
Well, we do become complicit. Like, I think because there's so much, like... ignorance or naivete about what China was doing, but as it all comes out, right, if we continue cooperating with them, like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
I mean, we've been complicit for the last 20 years, but, you know, as more things come out, I think, and this is what they're afraid of, that the world is going to stop cooperating with them, right? And this is now to go back to Chen Yongling, which I think we talked about, like, 15 to 20 minutes ago. So the former Ministry of Foreign Affairs diplomat who was in the Australian consulate in Sydney and defected.
Mm-hmm. We interviewed him.
Yeah.
It was good.
We interviewed him two years ago when we were in...
It was March 2018
yeah.
when we were in Sydney.
Yes. Those were our least viewed episodes. Because it was like
That's
at
right.
the height of the demonetization plus we were in... Australia and
uploads were slow.
We had a real production bottleneck.
It was the nadir. of yeah. our show.
It was the Nader of our show.
Nader.
But there were so many great episodes that
I'm
we
still
did
sad that not nobody saw that episode of you as Elrond.
Oh, yeah.
In Hobbiton.
That was amazing.
If
oh,
you've
my
seen
gosh.
That
do
episode.
A search for that.
Yeah.
It's, that would be April 2018 from New Zealand. Some yeah, it was,
yeah.
It was one of my favorite episodes. We got the whole costume and everything.
That was fun. Oh, and all those Chinese tour groups were taking photos with me because I was in Elrond getup, and they were like, I think that's a guy from Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah, I totally heard one of them say that.
So what's this thing about complicity?
Anyway.
Chen Yongling.
Chen Yongling. Well, his thing was about what he was talking about was the idea that it's not a contradiction. Like, when you look at all of the different narratives that the CCP is spinning, it can look contradictory or like a paradox, and it's confusing mm-hmm. for other governments or media or whatever to deal with it because these messages seem to be contradictory. That, you know, the U.S. is at fault, you know, for the coronavirus, but also we need to cooperate, like these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Or having like the foreign ministry spokesperson, Jolly Jan, saying the U.S. is responsible for the coronavirus. It may have been the U.S. military who brought it to China.
We're
and
the
then
victims.
Having the Chinese ambassador to the U.S., Cui Tiankai, say, oh, well, that's, you know, like, you know, we shouldn't speculate about the origins of, like, the coronavirus. So
yeah.
Two things that seem contradictory.
And he did that. The Chinese ambassador wrote that op-ed in the New York Times, which I think is incredible that the Chinese ambassador can do an op-ed in the New York Times, but no American ambassador in China could ever have such a...
The People's Daily is not going to run that.
No.
You know? Not unless the U.S. ambassador said some really great stuff about China. In that case, they would, you know. Like, if the U.S. ambassador came out and said the U.S. definitely needs to cooperate with China, that would be in the People's Daily.
Possibly.
But
in terms of, like, even the phrase...
Did you see that sigh? And this is filmed. Everyone saw that.
It's just that look, Shelley. I just...
I'm sorry. It's just
but
that
you didn't even notice it.
It's because I wanted to build on something you'd said, but I realized that I interrupted you. And... You know, I'm deeply sorry for hurting your feelings.
You've hurt the feelings of the Chinese person. anyway, well, I just wanted to get the Chen Yongling thing out, and then we can talk about it, because I feel like we're never going to get there otherwise. Which, his point was, the contradictory thing is on purpose. They are doing, not only in Chinese, it's called red face, white face, like singing red face, singing white face, because in Chinese opera... The heroes wear red face paint and the villains wear white face paint.
Oh, because it's like the ghosts.
Yeah, so yeah. It's kind of like, okay, they're playing the good guy and the bad guy. Like, they're the bad guy. Mm. They're trying to play the good guy. They're doing both.
Good
but
cop,
also
bad cop.
Kind of good cop, yeah, bad cop. And then, but it's like they're pretending to be the hero while they're the villain, that kind of thing. And then there's also what he called two-handed tactics, like using two hands. It's very confusing translation, but like I would say kind of like dual tactics, like using two things at the same time. So you can both use the U.S. is at fault. We need to blame the U.S. and the U.S. needs to cooperate with China. You can use both those things to kind of soften your message.
Oh, like and, so a carrot and a stick.
Yeah, kind of. Or like bringing it's like the Deng Xiaoping, like, you know, hide your strength, bide your time kind of thing. So when they feel like they've gone too far and they're starting to be pushback, then they'll bring out this cooperation line so that then you're going to be like, okay, well, you know, then they seem reasonable again. It's like, well, we need to cooperate, like soften it, like bring it down so that they can still kind of secretly pursue their vendetta against the U.S. or whatever. Like, you're going to fight, but you don't want it to be to your disadvantage.
It's right? really, like, complicated.
Yeah. Well, it's like you're going to – sometimes you're going to struggle,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you're going to cooperate, depending on what
–
like, how the wind's blowing,
it's
you know?
At the same time.
Yeah.
I think the two-handed thing – initially I was thinking it's, like, two hands like this. But
oh,
it's actually one
not...
hand shaking your hand and the other hand stabbing them in the back, right?
Or you could say that. Like, you're using two different things, like one thing in each hand, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So – and I think that the even the phrase cooperation itself, like there's – it implies when two people cooperate, there's an implication that they have the same goal. So they cooperate to achieve that goal. The problem here is that the U.S. and China don't have the same goals. The U.S.'s goal might be stopping the coronavirus, especially stopping the coronavirus' spread in the U.S., right? The Chinese Communist Party's goal is to crush America and use the coronavirus to stay in power and for their own political ends.
Well, I think they're, and also a goal of theirs is to not have the coronavirus in China.
Right.
And also to ensure that, like, American companies continue to invest in China and that the blowback doesn't ever come.
Well, I think that's definitely, if you read Cui Tiankai's op-ed in the New York Times, it's obvious that he's worried about global supply chains staying open and how it's important to, like, continue sharing pharmaceutical technology.
Please continue to invest in China and give us your technology.
We have great factories in Xinjiang.
Well, oh God. Well, you know, something that's, again, Chris, to your point, that this coronavirus thing is bringing out, like, all of these things that were always problems, but kind of more hidden before.
Mm-hmm.
The whole issue of the masks. And, you know, the supply chain, the offshoring that happened.
I mean, it kind of made, like, the whole argument against globalization come into focus for people who were just like, what? What's the problem with trade?
Right. Or, like, global trade and cooperation sounds good, right?
It sounds like Star Trek, the Federation.
I'm not sure that was the explicit argument made, but, you know.
I mean, that's the idea, that kind of utopian future. That really, if you look at Star Trek, it's a mess there. It's Star Wars from the Empire's perspective.
I thought you liked Star Trek.
I kind of do. But it's basically the civilization is based on race wars. Let's be honest. Finding a new alien species, wiping them out, taking their resources. That's what happens in Star Trek.
Wow.
That's dark, Chris.
That's what happens. They don't say it like that, but that's always what happens.
Like the original one or all of them?
All of them basically have that.
Hmm. Have you watched Picard?
I have not. I've heard that I've heard from people who are Star Trek fans that it seems like the writers, like, did not actually watch Star Trek and, like, made up stuff.
Oh, good.
But didn't Captain Kirk sometimes have romantic relationships with alien races?
Okay. Now we're going to get into Orientalism.
Aliens are not Orientals, Shelley.
We should do a collab with Alan's channel.
Generation Tech.
Generation Tech. Uh-huh. Yeah. And, like, you know, talk about Star Wars. I said Star Wars.
No.
Their channel is mainly a Star Wars channel.
It's a Star Wars and Star Trek channel, which is hilarious because those are the two things that people hate it when you mix them up like I just did.
I mean, they're the same story, just from a different perspective.
I can't wait to see the comments to this episode.
Oh, don't worry. Everyone stopped watching by this point.
Anyway, so what were we talking about?
Matt had a point that he was going to build off of you.
Yeah, which is that cooperation only works if both parties cooperating have the same goal. But if they don't have the same goal, or especially if America thinks that they have the same goal, but the Communist Party actually has a totally different goal, then cooperation turns to complicity.
This really does sound like Star Trek to me. That's just like, that's what the Federation would do. Cooperate with us as long as you cooperate on our terms. It's true.
So the Federation is now the Chinese Communist Party? Is that?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know enough about Star Trek to really follow this.
Oh, well, I know what we're doing after the podcast. Watching 2,500 hours of Star Trek. We'll begin with episode 1 of the original series and progress our way to Deep State 9 into old guard
Deep
now.
Deep State 9?
Oh!
What?
I know enough to know that is not the actual title of it.
Is that a Freudian slip?
Maybe.
A Picardian flip?
You were just talking about the utopian one world government of the Federation.
Yeah. So. They should have called it Deep State 9. Deep Space Nine.
Oh. Okay. All right. Back on track.
A little more
back
tea.
On track.
Were we ever on track?
This is why we usually have scripts.
Right. So, so the cooperation is, it's misleading rhetoric because it takes advantage of how Americans and people in general think cooperation as a principle is good. But really, it's being manipulated so that cooperation then has to be done on the Chinese Communist Party's terms, which actually end up undermining U.S. interests.
Do you think people are beginning to realize that what the Communist Party means by cooperation is not what we think of as cooperation?
I don't know. I think
only people who like watch our show kind of have this idea. But you have a lot of people. I mean, like that letter signed, that open letter signed on April 3rd by like 90 prominent U.S. scholars, including a lot of people who worked in the Clinton, Bush, and Obama administrations.
I think Madeleine Albright was one of the signatories.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, like also a lot of prominent Chinese scholars, like Chinese, not ethnically Chinese, but China scholars, you know, diplomats that.
Oh, people who study China. Know something about China.
Well, I think that like this is the whole engagement thing coming back up. Like the idea is that there's this in the China watching field, there are the engagement people and then there are the China hawks. Right. So the idea is that you're either like against China.
And I hate that framework of it's like, you know, because it makes the hawks sound like they're crazy and bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, also engagement sounds good.
Yeah,
the same
right?
way that cooperation yeah. sounds good.
Well, yeah, we should engage with those Nike factories in Xinjiang.
Yeah, here comes the complicit thing again. Well, I think that the, like, to be fair to the people who signed that letter, like, if you read the letter, it says, you know, that there's been human rights abuses, like, we don't agree with everything China's done, blah, blah, blah. So there's that kind of stuff
but
in there.
They always say that. It's always like, well, you know, we know it's not perfect, but if we just keep doing the same thing we've always done, we're going to get different results.
Well, or maybe they want the same results.
Oh, now we're talking about Deep State Nine.
I mean, I'm not really talking about like a conspiracy type of thing, but if you've built your career on the idea that like engagement is what works and blah, 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 if you know,
to then
like the Kissinger
like,
school kind of stuff, like, you know, it's you have
to be like, I'm a China expert and everything I said over the last 50 years was completely wrong. Now I'll tell you, keep listening to me.
I also think that it wasn't so clear, certainly not in the 1970s. But even in the 90s, when Bill Clinton was pushing for more engagement with trade, like I think it wasn't abundantly clear
that
China wouldn't actually become more like a liberal democracy or at least open up more.
I think people have this idea that there was this like better time between like 1990, mid-90s and like 2010-ish or 2012 when Xi Jinping came to office where like China was actually loosening up and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It's not true.
Yeah.
But if you were a like expat in China or if you were a business looking to go into China, right, that was the boom time.
Was it not true?
Well, because they were still killing massive amounts of their people. The whole Falun Gong thing started in 99. So like now retrospectively, we understand that like organ harvesting probably started to kick into high gear sometime in the early as like 2001 or 2002.
I mean, and those were the Jiang Zemin days. And I think like today people criticize Xi Jinping. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't criticize Xi Jinping. But he's arguably, you know, only ranked 3 out of 5 in terms of the most murderous dictators in China, right? Like, obviously Mao killed way more people, but Jiang Zemin was arguably a lot more murderous than even everything that Xi Jinping has done, and so
you'd rank Xi Jinping above Deng Xiaoping?
Well. So Deng Xiaoping oversaw the Tiananmen massacre. I think it's actually not totally clear how many people Deng Xiaoping killed because there just aren't good records in the foreign press and there wasn't social media then. So we don't really know. But I would and I think that every dictator under the Chinese Communist Party has been bad, right? Mao, Deng. We're going to ignore Hua Guofeng because he's...
I was like, you skip somebody.
Well, I know because... But then Deng Xiaoping took over in that coup like a year and a half later. So it doesn't really matter. But Mao, Deng Xiaoping, Jiang Zemin.
What's his face?
Hu Jintao. And then, and then Xi Jinping.
You also skipped... oh my God. I can't... Suddenly forgot his name. Zhao Ziyang. But he was... Deng was still really in power.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I mean, because there was all this, so that overlap between Deng and Jiang.
Right, but anyway, I've named the five people who actually held real power.
You say Hu Jintao?
Okay, so Hu Jintao never, I mean, you could make an argument that Hu Jintao never really had power, and during his entire era, he was under the control of Jiang Zemin.
And I think he had a moment in 2012 where things were going pretty good for him.
Yeah. When he was about to,
but he was also like behind a lot of stuff in Tibet too. Oh, so he's not a great dude.
Yeah,
either.
but I think you know if you look at the number of people that each of these dictators killed, I would argue only that like they're all bad. They all killed a lot of people. Jiang Zemin was probably next after Mao, because what's not really commonly talked about these days. Is like Jiang Zemin essentially created. He used the excuse of persecuting a bunch of people who meditate to build up this enormous internal police force in China that now is bigger and better funded than the Chinese military. And he used it first to persecute Falun Gong, but now like it's been used to persecute all sorts of people, but also just like the persecution of Falun Gong it was so terrible in terms of like the way that he like wanted to kill people and take their organs and sell them. It's just gruesome. And like his whole thing about, you know, destroy them financially and physically and spiritually. It was just like, go after them in like the most cruel way possible. And like, that's just how Jiang Zemin thought of the world and how he ought to run things. And so he probably killed, I mean, he's probably responsible for the death of well over a million people. But of course, we don't know, and we may not know for a long time, if ever, exactly how many people he killed. But like, that was pretty rough stuff, starting in, I would say, the late 90s, but definitely the early 2000s.
I think the thing is that we forget a lot about what happened in that period in China, because the internet wasn't as well developed. You know, there wasn't social media the way that there is now. Like these like hidden videos of like the Uyghurs in these concentration camps and things like that. There weren't things like that coming out of China. So when organ harvesting first got reported in 2006, right-ish, like it was just met with disbelief because, you know, the idea that like this was happening was so unbelievable. And it was being reported by the group that was being persecuted, and they're not reliable, like all these ideas. And now, like 15 years later, almost, like it's finally becoming more accepted that this is a thing that happened and is happening. But still, a lot of people won't believe it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the U.S. definitely, for the early 2000s, was much more focused on the Middle East and terrorism.
No, that's true, too.
And, you know, at the time, it seemed like there was money to be made in China, even though, you know, another problem from this, like, basically 99 to 2012 period is all throughout that period, China was still violating all of the agreements of the World Trade Organization, was still stealing American intellectual property. All of that stuff still was happening. It's just that was...
I mean, the Bush administration focused so much, the George W. Bush administration focused so much on the Middle East that, like, our entire foreign policy attention was essentially on the Middle East. And that basically from 2001 to the end of his administration, and even through...
I think through most of the Obama administration.
I would say Obama didn't even start to shift his policy towards Asia until about 2016.
I think it's a... Well, when
I forget
was the,
when the pivot to
when
Asia
When was pivot
started.
To Asia?
That was 2016.
I think it was 2015, 2016.
But at any rate, like... Like that was such a distraction from dealing with China. And like during that period of, you know, a decade and a half, the Chinese Communist Party, you know, they took advantage of the World Trade Organization. They lied. They cheated. They stole foreign technology. They, you know, invited foreign companies into China with one hand, and with the other hand, they stole their intellectual property and built up the homegrown companies. And they've, you know, like all of this stuff happened while America was distracted with Iraq, Afghanistan, just a larger Middle East issue. And like, it was all happening. And China Uncensored was talking about it since 2012, but like, there just wasn't a lot of attention on it until very recently.
I think also one issue with this is that the whole idea that this was a good thing, you know, like the idea that like offshoring and like
sending businesses,
you know,
to China
or like multinational businesses, like the whole like that it was a good thing. Was, you know,
right, like it'll be cheaper products.
It brings prices down.
You know, it's helpful to these third world countries.
There's an economic argument for offshoring stuff because, you know, you take advantage of the advantages of different markets, right? But the thing is that even that argument doesn't hold water when you're dealing with communist China, because what American companies were taking advantage of in China is not, you know, a certain type of skilled labor, or even really just lower wages. It was artificially low wages, thanks to essentially currency manipulation, a total degradation of the Chinese environment, because there was they didn't deal with the externalities of the pollution of the factories that produced the stuff, or the coal power plants, or any of that stuff.
Which is why we have to cooperate with China to fix global warming.
Right. And on top of that, you had slave labor, which was actual slave labor from Jiang Zemin's re-education through labor system. And even after they theoretically ended that system, they still basically have that under a different name. They're still slave labor, right? And now it's in Xinjiang. And so, like, these are all things that, you know, any economist would say, well, that's like, you know, working with another country on, you know, cross-border trade, okay. But when one country is cheating on currency, using slave labor, and destroying the environment, including pollution that affects the rest of the country, like the pollution that blows into the U.S. West Coast.
The world.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So all of that, like San Francisco's pollution is a result of that externality from China having, you know, poor environmental regulation or implementation, and coal power plants and all that stuff that allows us to have cheaper goods, but there's the high externality cost. And so from an economics perspective, it's still bad. And the Communist Party took advantage of all of this. And there's basically no economic justification for doing that. And so I think the argument, it's like one of those things where like cooperation sounds good until you realize it's actually on their terms. Well, global trade may sound good, but you have to look under the surface, because really it's global trade on the Communist Party's terms, which is they lie, cheat, and steal and pollute. And that affects everybody, but that's not factored into the economic cost.
You know, I've been looking into the whole for an American Uncovered episode about why the U.S. is running out of medical supplies like face masks and these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is, you know, the things that people blame, like capitalism, or I saw one article, opinion piece, that was blaming Trump's trade war for the shortage of medical supplies because there were tariffs put on medical supplies, which is true, but then those tariffs were taken off when the coronavirus hit. But what was interesting about that article is that the basis of that was the idea that, like, of course, globalization in terms of like global trade with China was a good thing. Right. Like, the problem isn't that, you know, we moved supply chains to other countries that are hostile to the U.S., but that, you know, that was fine. Our problem was then we antagonized the country that we moved the supply chain to with this trade war. Right. And so then we but like that was really interesting to me to see like that, like the conventional wisdom being that like, of course it's good, being so accepted as like, okay, well, the problem was the trade war. It wasn't the,
it goes back to the engagement theory that people are still stuck on.
Yeah. So the idea that, and I think like what you said about the coronavirus, like making a bunch of the propaganda narratives transparent, the problem with supply chains is becoming more and more visible to people, not just in the US, but also Europe. You know, all around the world.
Even
so
Canada.
I was reading an article today, I think in the Wall Street Journal, about how companies are getting, trying to buy masks from China as well, and getting really shoddy counterfeit masks. Mm. They're supposed to be N95 masks, and they look like, they had a photo of one of them. It looked like it was, you know, just a napkin or something with strings on it. And like people were complaining about how like they would get samples from Chinese companies and like only like 11 out of 40 were even testing to be, you know, usable. And it was just kind of horrifying to see this issue now come up across, where first there was the restriction in China on exports when they were facing the coronavirus issue. A lot of countries sent masks and things to China. Now that that economy is coming back up, a lot of other company, a lot of Chinese companies are trying to get in on, you know, making masks, but like the whole system, like they can't quality control for a lot of it. Like there's just a lot of companies that are not qualified to make these things that are doing it now. So, yeah. I mean, it's, so while they're trying to do this like face mask diplomacy thing where they're like, oh, we are providing, okay, selling face masks and things to medical supplies. So we've sold, you know, we've provided supplies to 185 countries around the world, was in a State-Run Media article I saw the other day. But meanwhile, places around the world, or at least places like, you know, the U.S. or European countries where they can be like, no, this is not okay. You know, we're not going to accept your reject, like these bad quality test kits or whatever. That's actually harming them. It's kind of like
they're shooting themselves in their foot.
Yeah, kind of. And what I find kind of funny about this also is that Taiwan has started doing face mask diplomacy.
Oh, that's great.
In a way, because they're actually donating masks to like millions of masks to different countries. And I've seen photos that like the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Taiwan have of the pallets of masks, and they all have big signs on them that say, Taiwan can help.
I mean, this really is an opportunity for Taiwan. Like more people are becoming aware of Taiwan's situation. Taiwan already has become a place where a lot of high-tech equipment can be made. If they play this well with, you know, providing face masks, like this could be a chance for people to be like, hey, you know what, maybe we should acknowledge Taiwan a bit more. Maybe we should do more business there and not China.
They really are the best province of China.
That's true. I mean, but that is true what you say, because it's like, it's almost like they're beating the Chinese Communist Party at their own game, because the Chinese Communist Party wanted to do this face mask thing, but they're being hampered by poor quality
things, horrible corruption.
And corruption and all these systemic problems that are caused by the Communist Party's rule in China.
Yeah.
And then Taiwan is doing the same thing, but better.
Taiwan's killing it.
They basically beat the Chinese Communist Party at every game. China wants to go high tech, but Taiwan's high tech industry is better. Taiwan has China says it's going to reform, but when Taiwan did political reform in the 90s, like they did actual reform, and now they have a real democracy. So like in every respect, Taiwan basically wins at the game.
I mean, but even a few years ago, that didn't necessarily look like it was going to be the case. I think because
it was bleak a couple years ago, allies being lost.
I mean, that's still a problem, but you know, under the Ma Ying-jeou and the KMT, it looked like they were trying to get closer and closer to China.
Kind of where South Korea and North Korea are right now.
Well, so now
that's not a rabbit hole we want to go down in this episode.
Yeah. So, I mean, Taiwan has had, you know, great success over the last couple years. And,
so maybe on that note, I'll say, if you're looking to have some tea, get this Taiwanese Alishan Milk Oolong Tea. If you want to buy it, use the link go.pathofcha.com/unscripted. And yeah, support Taiwan. It's the up-and-coming place to be. Thanks for listening to China Unscripted. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Gnaizda.
Talk to you next time.